Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Bulls Beat Podcast Show, the Chicago Bulls Podcast.
Welcome back to the Bulls Beat, Bulls fans. Doug Conis here with you discussing our Chicago Bulls. And we are sitting here at 24 wins, 48 losses, right down to the wire in terms of how these picks are going to line out. And the Pelicans, unfortunately, have jumped up to 43-30, and that puts them kind of behind three teams in the East in terms of wins, and right now behind four teams in the West and tied with the Spurs. They're one game up on the Timberwolves, and they're two games up on the Jazz. So it's going to be awfully close to see how everything lines up in both directions. The Pelicans had a really strong week. Good for them. Not so great for us. And we'll have to wait to see how things for them fall the rest of the year. They had a couple close wins, and I think that really hurt. You know, they lost to the Pacers, barely lost to the Lakers in the last two games. They do go up against the Rockets and the Blazers in the next two, then the Cavaliers, and then the Thunder. So those four games are four games that are going to be tough for them. If the Pelicans go 0-4, we might be really happy. If they go 4-0, boy, it's not going to look so good for that pick. So we'll have to wait and see. Maybe something in the middle gives us a kind of a so-so result, and we'll see how that goes. They've got two really gimme games against the Grizzlies and Suns left. Then they play the Warriors on the road and the Clippers on the road and the Spurs at home. Be interesting to see if that Spurs game actually ends up being for some type of meaningful home court advantage, because those two teams are neck and neck at the end of it. So we'll see. The Spurs definitely won't play anyone meaningful if the game doesn't mean anything to them. So it will be interesting to watch to see how that lines up for them. Chicago, on the other hand, is sitting here. They're a half game up on the seventh spot, so presently in eighth. And it looks pretty promising that they're not going to pass the Knicks. I think right now, maybe the worst case scenario is that they probably end up tied with the Knicks, who have 26 wins. That loss to New York was pretty big in terms of the Bulls ending up now in the race to get sixth, rather than having an opportunity to be sitting there possibly in ninth place all by themselves. But the Knicks, they've got one game left against the Orlando Magic. They'll probably lose the rest of their games. I think the Magic will find a way to ensure that they lose that game against the Knicks. But otherwise, it seems like the Knicks probably only have one win left. They play two against the Cavaliers at the end of the season and back-to-back games, their last two against the Cavs. It's possible that the Cavs will just start resting everyone and not give a crap at that point, too. Maybe the Knicks could sneak in one of those wins if both of those games are completely meaningless to the Cavaliers. From the Bulls' perspective, the big thing really comes down to these two games against Brooklyn. Now, Brooklyn doesn't have any incentive to lose, even though they're in the tanking race, because they don't actually own their pick outright. But if Brooklyn does end up winning both of those games, which the Bulls, you know, if they're trying to lose, should be able to do so, since Brooklyn has no incentive, then the Bulls will be in really good shape. They've also got one game in Orlando against the Magic. That's a game that you would expect that there's a fairly good chance the Bulls will win. Outside of that, they've got four road games coming up against the Pistons, Rockets, Heat, and then that one I just mentioned against the Magic. They've got another road game against the Celtics and one against the Nets. So only four more home games left for the Bulls. We'll see what they do. I think the Bulls are probably going to win two more games, finish with 26 wins total. And I think at 26, they're probably going to end up in seventh or tied for seventh or maybe eighth. If they can somehow win only one more and finish with 25 wins, they have an excellent chance to get to sixth. And even fifth is not entirely out of the question. I think it might be a stretch, but not entirely out of the question. I think Brooklyn, as long as the Bulls lose those two, would get there. The Kings will probably win at least one more. A lot of these teams play each other down the stretch, so they all should get at least a couple more wins. So we'll see how all that chases out. But it's going to be really close, and we'll have to wait and see. Now, for the rest of the season, it looks like the Bulls might be playing without Chris Dunn and Zach LaVine. We don't really have, you know, great updates on what's going on with them. We do know that Dunn with his turf toe was in a boot for a while, and it seems to me like he might be out for a while. LaVine is sidelined with knee tendonitis, which isn't so great. He's expected to be out at least one more week. And then at some point you start saying, well, why do you bother bringing this guy back if his knee is sore? I think really, especially when you're trying to lose games, that should be your incentive with all of this. Except, you know, we'll wait and see how things go with the Bulls. I mean, LaVine maybe wants to get back on the court to prove himself. He's not actually played so well. And I think that brings up the interesting conversation around his contract. So we were all assuming that Zach LaVine is going to be worth 20-something million dollars and we're going to pay him the max, and that might not be a great deal. Well, Zach LaVine right now, I don't see how he possibly commands a max from anyone. And if he does, you clearly just let him go. I mean, you clearly just say, yep, bye, see ya, have good luck with that. You know, I mean, I don't think the Bulls should be so concerned about whether they keep LaVine, only shooting 38% from the field and 34% from the three-point line. Both of those are career lows while he's trying to take the role of the man and being a massive, massive ball hog. So he's not really shooting well, well below what he's done in the past. Is it the ACL? Does he just need more time to get in the NBA court? Maybe. But what you got to figure is Zach LaVine, at his best before this season, was still a sub-15 PER player. He was a 14.6 last year. Still doesn't play a whole lot of defense. So he's not a guy I think teams are going to be lining up to pay huge amounts of money for. So I think the key with this, and the key maybe for the entire Bulls free agency this offseason, the big thing they have to do is don't do anything on day one. Unless you're just making a pitch at Paul George or some other star player, yes, do that at day one. But anything else, don't do it on day one. Just let these guys go. Learn from what happened last year with Cristiano Felicio. Now, Felicio is a guy who looked a little promising. You know, played some hustle minutes, looked kind of exciting. You know, young, athletic, big. Maybe this guy could do something for you, and, you know, he's going to get better. And he's going to develop. He'll have a good offseason. He's still young. Right? Like, maybe this guy could actually do something. And I thought when they made the signing, based on what had happened in the previous year's signings, that $8 million a year didn't seem like such a bad deal. It seemed like, yeah, it's all right. You could pay that much for a Felicio. It's not so bad. But 2 weeks later, when you saw what everyone else was going for and that the market was not going to be the same this year, it's a terrible deal. Well, this is going to be the same thing. There's not so much money lying around. So let all that money get used up on whoever guys think are their number one choices, and then start looking at the bargain bin for who else you might like. And I think the same approach needs to be used with David Nwaba. Now, David Nwaba is a guy that I kind of like. I think most Bulls fans like Nwaba. He's fun to watch, great hustle player, you know, plays really hard. And lately, even his three-point shot has come around. And if David Nwaba could shoot a three consistently, I think he'd be an awfully intriguing player. Like, really intriguing. Because he's a really strong defender, really great hustle player, one of those guys who's really aggravating. And he's not such a great scorer. And that's like the one thing that kind of holds him back from really being a guy that's very intriguing. But if he becomes a guy who can space the floor and hit open threes, boy, does that change. That changes a lot. Now all of a sudden, Nwaba is very exciting. You know, great rebounder, great defender, hits open threes, and also good at driving to the basket, picking up the scraps and moving on the pick and rolls, things like that. So David Nwaba's got a lot of things on the table that are pretty good. He's just not a star player and typically not a guy you want to overpay. Now, if teams aren't watching real closely and you don't make a deal with him right away, you might be looking at Nwaba for like $3 million a year for like 3 years. You know, 3 years, $12 million, 3 years, $9 million, $10 million, something like that. If you could do that, I'd really love to see David Nwaba stick with the Bulls. But if you have to go in early and you end up signing him to a deal that's like 3 years, $30 million or 3 years, $25 million, all of a sudden you can find another David Nwaba somewhere else. And now you're banking on the fact that his three-point shot is going to be good. He's going to be a quality three-point shooter for his career. And I don't think you want to bank on that happening. I mean, it might happen. And if it does, he's an awfully good player. But I don't think you want to bank on that happening. And I think that is the main difference. And, you know, speaking of guys who you're watching improve and maybe play better, I'm watching Cameron Payne play recently. And I noticed last podcast, I said, hey, Cameron Payne is playing pretty solid basketball, actually. You know, he's actually doing pretty well. And this is a guy we all maybe gave up on pretty quickly. But he's playing decently. He drives pretty well. His three-point percentage has been pretty good and decent volume relative to how many minutes he's playing. And he gets to the rim, makes pretty good decisions with the ball, a pretty good creative passer, someone who's got decent vision, decent rebounder for a point guard, not amazing, but decent. Pretty, like, kind of decent at kind of everything. I mean, a guy who's still very, pretty young and needs seasoning and needs to get better. And maybe it's just because he's playing in garbage time and no one cares about what's going on this season. It looks a little better, and you start, like, you know, someone has to compile the stats for this team, right? Like, so maybe that just all makes it look better. But Cameron Payne has shown me a little bit. Like, he might be a decent backup point guard, and maybe some days even a low-end starting caliber point guard if he actually continues to develop. It does validate a teeny bit for me that maybe the Bulls weren't so crazy trading for him. Now, I still think it was a pretty lousy deal to give up Taj Gibson and Doug McDermott for this guy. But, you know, maybe he's got something. I think he has a good chance of earning that backup point guard spot from the Bulls next year. And I almost was, like, watching him play, thinking, like, they might need to, like, limit his minutes to tank against some of these games. Like, there's times where Cameron Payne is, like, carrying the offense. And it's just, like, a funny thought. Like, he's just very so different from what you were thinking at the beginning of the year. Actually, you know, above a 15 PER, and has been really solid. And honestly, in the last few games, he's maybe outperformed what we saw Chris Dunn doing. And so watching the Bulls lately, when they've not actually had some of these guys play, I got to say, I'm getting a little nervous about these guys who earlier in the year, I thought these might be, you know, really quality players. And now I'm thinking, maybe we do just have a collection of guys, and maybe they're not going to be any good. You know, they're, like, they're really all guys whose, you know, PERs are falling below 15 now at this point. You got Bobby Portis, who's probably played, you know, really solid, still needs to improve on the defensive end. And you got a lot of guys sitting at like 14.x PERs. And maybe I overvalue the stat a little bit, but I just think that this is a team that, you know, maybe doesn't really have, you know, we hoped they had some star potential with LaVine and with Portis, or not Portis, maybe with Markkanen, with Dunn, maybe Portis sneaking into that conversation recently as well. Lowry, I don't know what to think. You know, he's really not played so great, and he's back after his back spasms. You know, he's another guy I think, like, if you're the Bulls, why even play this guy? Just, you know, just rest him the rest of the year. There's only a few more games. I know he needs experience, but if you're having back spasms, you know, he needs some strength program, and that's going to be the key for Lowry, I think, this offseason, is I think he's tired. He really needs to hit the weights for, like, 3 months, you know, be at the United Center or, you know, I guess not the United Center, the, well, now I think their practice facility moved, they reopened, so it is next to the United Center now. But they need to be at the practice facility all the time this offseason, lifting the weights, you know, building up his core strength, and then I think he could come back to be a really powerful player. Also needs to just work a whole ton on shooting threes. Needs to get that three-point percentage up. If he gets that three-point percentage up to that college level, like 43%, you know, and we'll just say 41%, something like that. And maybe it even dips down to 39%, but takes more threes because he takes more difficult threes all of a sudden. Then he's going to be a weapon, and he could be really an exciting player. But right now, I still definitely have, you know, some concerns about thinking, like, how great this guy's ceiling is. And, you know, we've talked for a while that, like, maybe if you redid the draft, that Lowry would end up being one of the top picks, probably a top three pick. And, you know, maybe that's still true. If so, I think that kind of maybe shows more about the draft so much than Lowry. I think at this point, you'd still probably take Jason Tatum above Lowry. Would you take Kyle Kuzma, who's, you know, I think probably had a better year than Kyle Lowry? Probably not. I think, Lowry Markkanen. I always, whenever I say Lowry, I start getting Kyle Lowry on the brain, so you have to excuse me. Lowry Markkanen, and now I'm wondering, how many times did I just say Kyle Lowry in the past 5 minutes? It may have been a whole lot. And I'm just embarrassed for myself, and I'm going to have to turn off this whole cast. But I'll power through. Not of a Mitchell clarity ahead. But I think it's interesting just to see, you know, what you think of these guys. I don't know that Lowry is really like a lock to be, you know, the top five pick coming out of the draft right now. You know, I think you could still make the case for some of these other guys as being better players than Lowry Markkanen in terms of the future. But we'll have to wait and hope that he continues to develop and actually ends up being that guy. Still definitely a hit, still definitely a quality pick. You know, I think you'd be looking at Mitchell, Kuzma, Tatum, and Smith as the four guys who may be ahead of him. I don't know that there's really like a whole lot beneath that that's exciting. I think the funniest pick so far is Lonzo Ball, who I thank goodness like all the hype is like just gone from this guy, that we're not talking about him so much anymore. And maybe it still is happening out in Lakerland or whatever. But at least now when I pull up ESPN to the basketball page, there's not like a whole ton of articles like on a weekly basis about Lonzo Ball and LaVar Ball, which just drove me nuts. But he's a guy who just cannot shoot, cannot finish. And if he could, he would probably be amazing. And we'll wait to see if he ever learns those things, because the rest of his skills seem okay. But boy, does he struggle with those things. So we'll have to wait and see what happens with him. Maybe he's another guy who still, you know, flashes a lot of potential but needs to learn to score. And you know what? Learning to score is awfully hard. Yeah, that's like a really big thing. Yeah, it's really a big thing. So it will be fun to watch Lowry's development over the next few years and see if he continues to earn that selection. And it'll be also fun to watch who the Bulls get this year. Because I think this year in the draft, you know, there are guys who are going to land at like 8, whom at the beginning of the year we would have thought were 1, 2, or 3. So no matter where the Bulls pick, you're going to get a guy who's got some pretty big upside. And I think that is pretty exciting. So I think even if the Bulls end up with 7 or 8, something like that, I do think they'll have some pretty big upside. Of course, we'll be rooting for the lottery balls to fall and end up picking number 1, 2, or 3. But we will see what happens. I think the Bulls, based on their history of drafting well, will do some nice scouting, and they'll find the right player, and they'll pick the right guy, and it'll be a quality selection. So that's about all I have to say on that. I think that pretty much will wrap it up for this edition of the Bulls Beat. Nothing else much to add. It's going to be kind of a slow end of the season. I might be the only one watching Bulls games over the NCAA tournament. I know it's painful, but I've been doing it anyway. And I think it'll be fun to see how the Bulls end up picking. I kind of get excited about this pick, you know, and the potential for the future and the chance that the Bulls are going to really rebound quickly, because I'm a believer that this team is going to rebound quickly. And I think we're going to have a lot of fun next season. So these last few painful weeks are going to be painful, but just like working out, the pain is going to be worth it in the end. And I think we'll have some good times ahead of us. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm Doug_Tonis there. Of course, the Bulls Beat is posted on ChicagoBullseye.com and up on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. And I will talk to you guys next week.